Welcome back to He's Abroad. This is Jason here in Brooklyn, joined as always by John, who's in Vancouver.
Yeah, just in Vancouver. Abroad.
Just in Vancouver. Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here, this is going to be a special episode. We're going to do a little deep dive. We might do some more of these. We're actually going to do two of these in a row. So
yeah, I think that's the hope. For those of you who've been with us for a long time, mostly family and friends, for the few of you who are listening to this who aren't family and friends, we used to do this on our other podcast where we would specifically have a review section. We'd talk about a movie, we'd review it, we'd spoil it. So that way it's like, yeah, if you've seen it and you just want more content of something, it's just two guys giving their opinion. I've got film background, Jason's got game media background. So, you know, talking about story, talking about visuals, talking about everything that encompasses in a film. So we used to do this quite often. And so I think we're going to get back to it now that we're on closer time zones, not same time zone, but as close as we're getting.
Yeah, exactly. So we got to kick this off with a sequel to one of the greatest movies of all time from a venerable director.
Want, you should refresh people on your thoughts on this first film because we differ.
Oh, here. I will. I believe yeah. I just did. Okay. And I think I just did. The title will basically be clear, but we're talking about Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom this episode. Now, the DCEU is dead now.
Yes.
This is allegedly the last film, movie, experience, thing in the DCEU. And it was not good, right? Like, for the most part. Now there are some wins, right? There were some that were pretty good. I personally really liked Man of Steel, so I thought it was off to a pretty good start. I know people have some issues with the way it ended, but man, there are some good stuff in that movie.
Yeah.
Like that scene where he flies. Come on. That's good shit.
And look, like the original Wonder Woman wasn't bad. The sequel was awful.
Awful.
Like
awful.
Really, like that to me is the way, I hate saying it because I wanted that movie to be so good.
Yeah.
And again, COVID and that, like there's a lot of issues that were around that time that I think exacerbated how bad 1984 was. It was bad.
Yeah.
The first Wonder Woman, I really enjoyed. Right. And I've got a history of not necessarily liking superhero movies for reasons. And I really liked the first one. I thought the first one was good, even though there were some things that were a little ham-fisted. And look, the latest Flash movie, I didn't hate.
Yeah,
it wasn't good, but I felt like that was unfairly dogged in a way that I was like, wait a minute now. Like, this isn't nearly as bad as the Justice League movie. Like, there's other movies that I can point to that are bad, right? And this universe has Shazam in it. Shazam, I think, for the most part, was not necessarily completely terrible. It's got Black Adam in it, which the best part of Black Adam was Pierce Brosnan. so like you said, there's moments here in this DC extended universe that, you know, just to say that the whole thing was awful and it all need to be completely thrown away, I would say is unfair.
Right. Now, the shining example of DCEU at its best is obviously the original Aquaman movie. And I unabashedly love Aquaman. It is so silly. It is so fun. It is, I really think that it has like some really great action set pieces, like when they're in Italy. I think Jason Momoa is just fun to watch. It feels like a silly comic book movie that at the same time has the modern trappings and doesn't fall victim to like the daredevils back in the day. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Like, and look, and I mean, Aquaman has always been a joke to a lot of people, right? Like I would argue, and I think we had this discussion at the time, that the best part about the DC universe to me is Batman. And I would say at this point, that's unequivocally, those movies within this universe, again, not within this universe, but within all of DC comic book lore, the Batman movies have always done the best because that story and that character and the characters around it are so strong. I mean, the Joker movies have done so well that, you know, the most successful things around DC have been attached to Batman.
Right.
And I was hoping, just because of knowing how terrifying the ocean is and that Aquaman has always been a joke of like, hey, look, there's a guy that talks to fish. Right. Like even the television show The Boys, right? There's a character called The Deep that is basically Aquaman. And it's nonstop talking about how gross and disgusting and weird a creature from the sea would be if he was a superhero. So it like leans into how goofy that idea and that concept is. So yeah, for the first movie, like you said, to be fun and for Jason Momoa to be that character and do it in a fun way, but not, you know, and acknowledge that this is a little goofy, right? Like he, you know, in the first movie acknowledges, well, this is stupid. You know, like there's a fish man, you know, whatever. He's the ocean master, right? Like there's lots of jokes in there that you're like, this is lame. But like you're saying, it was done. It was fun. And that movie was not, it's one of the highest grossing DC movies, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's up there.
Let's see. I was just trying to dig up some stuff. DC movies by box office. Let's see. I think the top was, so Wonder Woman. Yeah, so lifetime gross, actually. Wow, that's interesting. So Wonder Woman is the highest.
Right. Okay, I'm not surprised by that.
But what do you think it? Me. What do you think it's at?
Oh, like millions of gross?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. That movie's been out for a long. I mean, it's been. This has been a while.
It came out in 2017.
Look, yeah. So like, I'm comparing it to sort of Marvel, you know, blowing the top off the box office. Let's say half that. So let's say 500 million. Is that too low?
No, it's actually too high. Wonder Woman is number one at 412 million, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
I can't believe none of these cracked half a billion. That's nuts.
I'm surprised by that because like Black Panther, both Avengers movies, Infinity War and Endgame, right? Those are in the billions.
Oh, yeah. They have multiple movies.
Spider-Man's in the billions, I think.
Some of the Spider-Man. Yeah. Yeah. So Aquaman is number two at 335. And then Batman vs. Superman at 330, Suicide Squad at 325. That would be the first surprising. One, the right. David Ayers. Then Man of Steel, 291. Like, it's really interesting that an IP that puts its hero properties out there and can't break that number. It's interesting that they kept going for another like 7 years.
But they're also some of the most recognized superheroes. Like Marvel.
Yeah.
Historically, Marvel, it was Spider-Man and the Hulk. And all these other characters, the X-Men, you know, a lot of that stuff you can say, like, that's 90s cartoon. Like, not even a comic book with X-Men. Deadpool was an unknown character unless you were a comic book fan, right? Like, they have, Marvel, for all their issues now that they're trying to sort out, has done a really good job going into that 70 years of comic book history, pulling characters out and making them interesting. You could argue DC had a head start. Batman, Superman. Like these are known characters that have multiple film franchises. Superman and Batman do at least. Like those are some.
That was just domestic. Sorry, those numbers were just domestic.
Right, but fair enough. The point is still there because domestically, the Marvel movies are in the billions still. Right, domestically, they're still $1 billion. So yeah, like it's just interesting that. Yeah, I'm not surprised because Wonder Woman I thought was really well done. I think people have issues with women superheroes anyways, right? Like that's like regardless of how you cut it, there's people who are going to be mad about, oh, you're trying to go woke, whatever, even if it's completely nonsense. But Wonder Woman was done real. It was better than the Marvels, or sorry, better than Captain Marvel. It was a much better way of introducing a new character that is kind of this really overpowered character in a way. That first Wonder Woman movie of going back in history and showing through World War II, and then that was really well done. It was great.
Right. So then you look at the top gross again, looking domestically here, the top two, the only two movies that beat Wonder Woman are Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight being the top, made half a billion just domestically. And then the Batman is below Wonder Woman. Joker would be below that, then Aquaman. So
yeah.
Big movie. I mean, Aquaman did really well, especially for something as silly as Aquaman. But yeah, they're just not, you know, I don't know. I think they tried too hard to rush the universe thing.
Well, because they were, I mean, Marvel passed them very quickly, right? Like Iron Man comes out and is like, oh, wow, we've never seen a superhero movie like this before. And they start building on that success. And it happened very quickly. And DC is sitting here going, man, we got these properties. We got Batman. We got Superman. How are we behind in this world? And I think they were rushing to try and get to where Marvel had gotten to over a decade in half the time. And I mean, less than that, in a third of the time. They go, we need a universe. We need a universe. And they start rushing these characters. They start, you know, you get Ben Affleck in there as Batman. You start trying to just plug things in to make it work. And it shows. It shows through the movies of how they try to connect together when they just don't connect very well.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a list. Okay, so from Iron Man to the Avengers, it was 4 years. And then DCEU movies by release date. Why do I think it was shorter?
It feels shorter, even if it's not.
Yeah, so they went from Man of Steel to Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, exactly. Immediately you go to basically...
They never established this Batman.
Right. You basically go to Civil War, right? Like you basically fast forward from Iron Man to the first Captain America to Civil War. And here it's like you said, you go to Man of Steel and then you just go, well, let's just get Ben Affleck to be Batman. And there you go. And that's it, right? And like you fast forwarded... Again, superhero movies, and this is a big part of my Aquaman 2 review here. I get it. There's visual effects and there's things, right? We now have the way technology to make worlds and things come alive that you couldn't do before, right? Like Aquaman was not possible 40 years ago because you just couldn't make a movie where everyone is under the sea. It was just harder, right? And so visual effects has made all this easier. But at the end of the day, your characters and your story is what will always supersede and be what carries your film, right? Like if you don't have good characters and you don't have a good story, the rest of the shiny stuff you put on it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. People don't care about that stuff the way that they care about the characters, the way they care about their connection, the representation of the characters. That's why, I mean, Black Panther, if you rewatch the first Black Panther, it's not a great movie. But the way that they connect those characters and bring you into that world is fantastic. It's a great movie because of how great Michael B. Jordan is, because how great Chadwick Boseman is, because how great that Shuri is and the world that they build around it. If they just stick you in this fictional Africa and there's no characters, that movie would have bombed like all the rest of them do. It just would have.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's a big part of what I think has been... what historically has really dragged down this DCEU, in my opinion, for all of these films, right? They just don't, like you said, they were rushing. They're just trying to get to the end game without building the story that makes you care about the end game.
Right. Exactly. So I think the first movie, I understand. The first Aquaman movie is one that I like because of how straightforward it is. It's silly. It knows it's silly. And it's just a good time. Right. It's just a good time. And I don't know anything about Aquaman. So I'm going into this thing with no expectations. And then I come out having an absolute blast, literally laughing my ass off at the end when the crab people show up and start fighting in the swamp. I'm like, what the hell is this? This is just chaos. But at least it leads to the chaos because it's so simple and it has a very it's easy to follow. You just have point A to point B to point C, et cetera. And you're on an adventure with these guys. Like it might as well be an Indiana Jones movie at some point.
It
right?
is. I mean, so, it's a buddy cop movie, really.
Right. And that's, well, no, I'm talking about the first one.
Sorry.
I'm talking about the first one. And they're hopping around the world. But even then, everything connects. Even when the political stuff is going on, it's quite easy to see this stuff being set up. It's not complicated.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think to credit, that's a big part of these. Like, that's a big part of, I mean, look, I know a lot of people dog on Avatar, but when I was working on that, one of the things I was like, this is actually like how simple the story is. It's very clear. It's a good guy. It's a bad guy. There's some conflict with the good guy about what is he supposed to do and what are the things that pull him back to the world that, you know, like it was really simple. You just look at the movie and go, okay, I got it. It's simple. I don't need hours and hours of explanation in details of why I should care about this. It's pretty easy. Here's a fun guy. Here's a not so fun guy. He's bad. He's good. Smash the toys together, right? So I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So he has... So James Wan was the director of the first one. He was director of this one. He also directed one of my favorite Fast and Furious movies, which is Furious 7. And again, pretty simple. And that was just kind of polishing everything they've been doing from that point on. Really simple, four major set pieces. We're going to go to this thing, to this thing, to this thing, to this thing. And we're just going to have fun along the way. And they nailed it. And no movie in the series, I don't think, does it as well as that movie does. Yeah. I mean, Fast Furious 6 basically created that temp, like kind of set it up. But I think Furious 7 is even better in its pacing. Yeah. But that's up to debate. You know, if you want to say 5, 6, 7, all interchangeable, fine. But he knows how to make an action movie. And there are some awesome set pieces in that movie. He also knows that he also does a lot of horror movies that people love. The guy made the original Saw, which is one of the most simple premises that it's like, bam, got it. Easy. right?
Yeah, and that was kind of the hope, at least for me at the time, of going, man, you know, to make a bit of a horror film out of this guy who rules the sea would be pretty awesome. And I would say that, for me personally, is why I did not like the first one, because I wanted a little bit, and again, it's not that it's a bad movie, it's just me personally going like, okay, it's just a little too, it's the Marvel goofiness, it's a little too many, you know, you get jokes, you get, you know, Jason Momoa doing some screaming and some hooting and hollering. Like, it was just, for me, I was just like, I don't need more of that, because I'm just going to watch the Marvel movies if I want to see a guy kind of finger gun at the camera of how funny he is. But I do get why, in that universe with a character like Aquaman, why that worked, right? Like, yeah. I understand it just wasn't for me.
Yeah. So then you got this movie, Aquaman 2.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, and by the way, we're just going to spoil this movie.
Yes.
Yeah. This movie's awful. I mean, I and I loved the first movie. I mean, I talked about how much I loved the first movie more than
anyone else I know. Like, honestly, you're like, yeah, this is the greatest movie of all time. You loved it.
I don't think I've found anybody who loves the first movie as much as I do.
No.
Man, do I love that movie. And this movie is trash. It is trash. Like, it is so bad. And when I'm watching this thing, the thought that's going through my mind is, I don't think James Wan made this movie. Hmm. Or if he did, he just completely checked out. Like, I have a lot of issues with The Dark Knight Rises, right?
Sure.
That's a movie that comes up in a lot of our conversations, because yes, it's a movie that the more I watch, the more I dislike it. And I feel like the same thing would happen with this movie, which is why I'm probably never going to watch it again.
Sure.
But one of the problems with that movie, I had a friend of mine who'd said, and it probably stuck with me because it was one of the last conversations I ever had with him, which is kind of morbid, but it's true. I saw The Dark Knight Rises. I came off of the marathon viewing of it, you know, where you watch 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
And then I asked him, I'm like, oh man, what'd you think of Rising? He's like, oh, it sucked. He's like, that was just like a fuck you from Christopher Nolan. And I was like, oh, interesting. That's crazy, because I really liked it.
Right.
And then I watched it again, and I was like, oh, this is like a studio hack job. Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
I'm doing it because I have to. And right, my biggest problems with the movie are that the moment you start thinking about anything in it, it sucks and it's lazy.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of a Nolan movie, which always strives on like its attention to detail. And
yes,
that's why Dark Knight, Batman Begins and Dark Knight are so good, because it validates everything it does to fit in the universe.
Well, not only that though, and again, I'm going to come back to this because, you know, we're going to do this, but we're also going to do another one on Oppenheimer. Something that Christopher Nolan does really well is, if you give him a great character that you can dive deep into, it's why it's some of his best filmmaking, is when he has a character that he really cares about. You can tell that he got an actor who really cared about the Joker in Heath Ledger, and you had a director that really cared about the Joker. And that's why The Dark Knight is one of the greatest superhero movies, if not the greatest superhero movie, as far as live action is concerned, ever.
It's no,
because the Joker is so great, right? And you could argue that's the, if there's not a great character, The Dark Knight Rises, he wasn't interested in Batman. And that's why he didn't want to make another. But, like, you know, but, he's like, I'm not interested in it. So like, it suffers. Bane suffers. All of it suffers. It's lazy, because he's not like, hey, I'm just going to dive into Bane. Bane was not interesting to him. Bane was just, hey, get Tom Hardy to do a voice, and we'll just do this thing. Tom, you take it away. I'm just going to sort of wrap this thing and put it together. That's at least why, to me, it felt lazy, especially how they wrapped it up at the end. The way that movie ends is one of the laziest endings ever.
It's just like, hey, so yeah, lazy.
He's like, I'm done with it. I'm done with this.
Yeah,
we're finished.
The problem, but my issues with the movie, forget about the motivation, but the execution of it,
sure,
is a reflection of that motivation, whatever,
yes,
the reason, right?
Yeah.
Because I think there was rumors or something that he had a plan with the Joker, and then when Heath Ledger died, he kind of lost motivation to do it.
100%.
But then Warner Brothers is like, no, you got to do another movie.
Yeah,
you
got to do it.
So
yeah,
he's
like, cool, so let's get this and let's just
do
this.
It's a hack job.
And all of it's a hack job. Yeah.
It the transitions, the laziness, it's like Gotham is now Manhattan. And then, you know, randomly it shifts from daytime to nighttime. And
yes,
then time passes. He's stuck in a hole. Then he just shows up. How the fuck did he get there? Why did he take his time making a giant bat symbol? I'm just saying, like, nothing makes any sense from a character decision. Nothing makes sense chronologically. The like it's just crazy. It's just a way to just like, yeah, this happens and this happens, and then everybody's happy in the end. It's like, what?
Well, like you said, right? It's the execution of how you edit a movie.
Yeah.
Of how you, like you said, you just cut it together and someone shows you first version. You go, yeah, it's good enough.
Yeah. So this movie is basically that.
Yeah.
This is like the Dark Knight Rises treatment of whatever. I mean, it's worse for many reasons. you can't really compare the two, but it's I got similar vibes, but I got it on my first viewing because it was so chaotic and so lazy. And I was just like, I don't think James Wan even worked on this movie because it throws away everything I liked about the movies that I liked prior, which was the simplicity, the straightforwardness, the easy to follow. It was just like things happen. All right. And this kind of the first time it reared its head, because it started off, and I'm like, all right, we're having fun. We're back in these characters. We're seeing what's going on. Jason Momoa is being peed on. Fair enough. Whatever. And then like there is a sequence. You're following the bad guys, right? And they're stealing stuff. And then all of a sudden, Amber Heard shows up, and then you're like, oh, they're in Atlantis. It's like, well, how did we get here? Why did we get here? What the hell is going on? And then every action scene is incredibly difficult to follow. Like the whole thing that I love that Italy scene that I was saying, that chase scene. And that is playing with a lot of different like verticalities. You have these sweeping camera shots. You really feel the momentum, and it's fun the whole way through, despite like three chases happening at one time. You know, it's cool. It's fun. This movie does not have one comprehensible action scene in it. Everyone is complete chaos. It's just annoying. Like everything about this movie is just annoying to watch.
It's funny because one of the things that struck me is that this is the equivalent of a bad Fast and the Furious movie. Now, someone might go, there's no such thing as a bad Fast and the Furious movie. There's things in Fast and the Furious that make it, we all know it's ridiculous, right? And I think like the fact that the film still takes itself as seriously as it does, like you have a main character who's just serious, right? Vin Diesel, there's no jokes from Vin Diesel. He's not joking at all. This Fast and the Furious thing is about family. It's real. It's life. Yep. And it felt like that a lot because a lot of the themes are around family, right? It's like the same old tropes of, guy becomes father. You know, guy realizes what's important, but done really badly. Oh, guy and his brother, you know, reconciliation with your brother, but done really badly, right? It's like the same tropes, but with none of the things that make those tropes fun or interesting in other movies. It's just like like you said, someone just goes, hey, look, he's got a kid now. What happens? Okay, let's just steal the kid in the end and make that kind of the plot device. Let's use this kid as the damsel in distress. Oh, yeah, he's got a brother. What do we do? Yeah, let's just have them run around and doing brotherly stuff, you know, throwing jokes at each other, little brother all the time. Like, it was just that. And that, to me, was the laziest part of it, because you're just like, okay, you got some things that are pretty fundamental and that everyone can connect with. We have enough movie with all of these themes in it. And you just mailed it in a way that I'm like, you didn't have to mail it in. You still could have done this, like you said, very straightforward, very fun, and very easy. But instead, it's way complicated. There's different realms, and there's a lost realm, and then they're in Atlantis, and they're out of Atlantis, and there's pirate world that's like, okay, we're in this big CG world, and he meets a guy with no hands, and there's 2 seconds of an action sequence, and then they leave. Like it was just, you can tell they filmed this thing on a green screen, and then James Wan was just like, all right, we got to create a bunch of cool environments and a bunch of CG. And then he's like, yeah, that's fine. That's good enough. Yeah, that works. That's Atlantis? Yeah, cool. That's fine. Okay, yeah, just put those guys in there on the green screen, and then we'll just run the movie. And that was it. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't look good. There was a lot of times where there was an action sequence where one frame would look great, and then the next frame it would look like shit.
Yeah.
You're like, how did this happen? Like, especially at the end. I remember they were climbing that wall at the end or something, and it was just like jarring because they kept switching back and forth between things that looked okay and things that looked really bad.
Yeah.
It's like, this again, is
You can tell when a director, again, and this is what sucks, right? Because I immediately compared it to the last Ant-Man movie, which I don't know if you saw that movie.
I did. I didn't hate it, but it was.
No, fun. But again, it's like sort of when it's like, hey, they don't have any interesting, like from a director standpoint, they're just like, we're filming this whole thing on a green screen. And because we need to build all this CG, I'm going to check out of this. Like, I know the end is just CG and it's a lot of explosions and stuff going on, but I'm just not interested in that. So I'll let the visual effects supervisor and the producers deal with that. That's what it felt like, which is why it looked the way that it did. Like, it's not purposeful CG. It's just CG to fill the frame.
Right.
And when you make CG to fill the frame, stuff's going to fall. It's not going to look as good. You're going to have green screens and matte replacements, and the hair was doing weird things at times. And you're like, are they underwater? Are they not underwater? What is going on? This is a mess. And yeah, it's like, we've got a bunch of cool action sequences and ideas and worlds and world building that's written on a page.
Right.
But the minute it comes to actually building it, the director and the person who's editing the film, they just don't see it. And so they're like, well, look, we've got these guys green screen. We're just waiting for the CG. Yeah. And then when the CG comes in, they just go, okay, I guess that's it. Cool. Like, it's not done purposeful. Like, no one is going in there going, we want to purposefully build this world in a way to tell the story. It's like, hey, they go to this pirate world. Just build the pirate world and we'll do things around it and it will leave. And that's what it felt like.
Yeah. And they're just like, and they just randomly stitch stuff together.
Yes.
Instead of actually telling a cohesive story.
Right.
And there's the story is,
story. Yeah,
it's not even that complicated. Again, I think you have a simple story, but the way you're weaving in all of these threads, it's like, God, this
want to weave in some, like, I read something of like Jason Momoa, like specifically it sort of pitched this idea in a way to James Wan. And then it kind of came together that way. Cause James Wan had no intention of making a sequel was what I had read. It was really Jason Momoa going, hey, look, man, I think I got something. I mean, it starts talking about climate change. Like, yeah, that is the overarching theme of this, of, you know, Mantis is trying to heat up the world. He's trying to accelerate climate change. And by doing this, he gets to also kill Aquaman, who killed his father. Like, it's really, like you said, it's not a complicated story, but you can tell there's a lot of people with their own agendas and what this needs to be. And I could totally understand, like you said, when James Wan didn't make this movie, I kind of think he didn't. He just, there's a bunch of ideas and his job was to wrangle those all together. And he just basically said, well, look, this is what I wrangled together. This is what it is. And then put on top of that COVID. And also something that we can't just dismiss is Amber Heard. Because while they were making this movie, and this movie was delayed, the funny thing is this movie was supposed to come out like the same day as Avatar. And I remember when that was announced. And I just laughed and I was just like, there's no way this thing's going to push. Like, it has to, because they're going to get clobbered by this. There's no way they're going to release this thing at the same time. And so the movie got pushed another year to basically December 2023. And Amber Heard, during this whole time, was in a legal battle with Johnny Depp that she didn't come out of that the way that I think she was expecting to. And it totally tanked her ability to be sellable in this franchise. And as me and you were talking before we did this, this movie is not her fault.
No.
Like, it's not that you see Amber Heard and you go, oh, yeah, she's just not. It's like, to me, I'm like, she's actually probably one of the stronger characters just because she's in it so little. But she does tie it together. She ties one of the major themes, which is the family theme, together in a way that I'm like, well, she didn't overdo this at all. She actually did just fine. This is not her. This movie's failure is not on her. This is totally outside of her control. She just happened to be in the unfortunate situation that a very private legal battle with a very popular star became very public, and she didn't win that the way that I think she was maybe expecting to.
Right. She became a useful scapegoat. Because 100%. That's people like, oh, it's bad because of her. I was like,
No, she isn't. She ruined a lot of other stuff. She didn't ruin this. Yeah.
But it's like the movie itself, maybe they wanted to do a climate change thing. I guess, that makes sense. But
yeah, that was a big part of it.
But the plot, that should never be, unless you're making a documentary, the core still has to live with the characters and try and stay along a simple plot. You're fucking Aquaman, right?
Yeah.
Because the moments with him, with Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson were fun.
Yes.
Like, I thought those two guys were fun, but you didn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And that was the strongest part. And then the moment you jumped into anything else, it was chaos. And even the whole motivations of why these guys are together and having this chemistry don't make sense.
And at the same time, right, the villain was not, like, when they tried to weave Mantis in the first film and in other parts of the franchise, like, they tried to weave it in. But for a character that has actually had quite a bit of screen time, man, did he just fall flat. He just became a caricature of what he kind of was in the first film, right? Because the first film, he's in it enough.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of became a total, well, I'm just a bad guy. I'm going to heat the planet and kill Aqu-. Like, it totally lost this pull for you to go, huh, maybe I'm rooting for him a little, this is interesting, right? This isn't just so black and white. And they just made him a total caricature of his character. And that's the problem, right? Like, that was Wonder Woman 1984's problem. The villain was awful. And for a lot of these films now, if your villain is not good, Like, think about the movies that have been the most successful in superhero films. Other than maybe Deadpool, they all have really strong villains. Like, really strong, where the consequences feel real. Like, you know, obviously the gold standard is going to be Thanos. But even Black Panther, I'd argue Michael B. Jordan was a better character than Chadwick Boseman's character was in Black Panther. It was more interesting. And if you don't build a good villain, the hero kind of doesn't have much to do, right? The hero's just kind of running around, you know, punching things. If the villain doesn't actually feel like, okay, there's some consequences here, and I'm conflicted as an audience member of whether or not, oh, okay, I feel the emotional pain and toil. I didn't feel any of that with Mantis. It was just like, okay, this guy's just trying to do some weird stuff, and he's got a trident, and oh, another world. Like, it was a mess. This movie's a terrible mess.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need... I like a good villain with motivation, but I also don't need that. I'm happy to just have a threatening villain, or like an interesting one, even if he could be interesting just by how like over the top and crazy he is. I mean, that's kind of what the idea of the Joker was, is that in Dark Knight, it's like chaos. This guy's just a psychopath.
Just chaos.
He doesn't, he's not altruistic. He doesn't have any like deeper meaning. It's just like, nope, the guy's just crazy and he wants to do crazy things.
But I would argue though, the supporting villain in there, Two-Face.
Yeah.
Supported the Joker in a way that was interesting, right? Because it's this politician. It's this fall from grace of this politician who is trying to do right. And the Joker is such a powerful force that he even turns that, right? Like to me, I'm like, that's why that movie's so great, is because it is complex, where it's like you have multiple villains, but you're right. Your main villain, the star of that movie. Again, the star of that movie was not Batman. It was Joker. It was the villain. And if your villain is real, and I would argue even in the first Aquaman, like you said, Ocean Master wasn't some amazing villain, but he did his role really well. It was a solid role that felt like it had consequences. There's a family tie-in connection to it. You felt something there of going, okay, this villain can stand on his own. You know, there's a good chance that Aquaman might not win. But I'm watching this and going like, there's no chance that Aquaman's not, that this isn't going to just get wrapped up, right? Like, you're watching going, okay, when was this over? When are we done?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then you had the other guy, like, man, what's his name? The scientist guy or whatever.
Randall Park. I forget his character's name, but which totally underutilized for a guy.
Yeah, because he's always fun. And he kind of sucked in this too, just because not for himself, only because he's just kind of, he's just not given anything to work with. That's interesting.
That's what I mean. This is, again, nothing on him. He goes there and goes, so what am I doing? Okay, I'm just supposed to be, I'm a scientist who then realizes what's happening is wrong. Okay, he's like, okay, I can do something with that. Is there anything else? And they're like, no, that's it. And he's like, oh, okay, cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you can just hear the conversations of how these people got put into these roles. And I'm sure the whole thing swirling around Amber Heard, which had just become so emotional to a point from a pop culture standpoint, probably just affected of people being like, well, why do we care about this thing? Like, this thing's a mess, right? Like, James Wan doesn't really care about this. Jason Momoa is having his own issues, right? He was starting to go through relationship rumors and this and that, and he's just like, hey, I'm just here to have fun, guys. But a little bit, yeah, because now they filed for divorce. But again, like, all that stuff is infected, and COVID, right? And this is all happening during COVID. So I can understand why people would be working on this thing going like, what are we doing here? Like, and James Wan is like, I don't really want to be here anymore. Like, what are we doing? And like you said, it feels like that. This whole movie
and
feels
the collapse,
like,
and the collapse of the DCEU, which takes away even more motivation.
Yeah. Like, you can just tell when they were working on this movie, there was nothing here pulling people together. Jason Momoa is probably your best case of trying to pull people together, because he really liked this character, right? But like you said, as soon as James Gunn comes in and goes, yeah, Aquaman's going to be it, you're just like, okay, well, no need to get out there and, you know, the movie's done. Just get it out there. I've been paid. Move on. And that's what it feels like. It feels like this is a real thudding finality to this universe. And they're just going to, I mean, I don't think James Gunn is pulling anything from this world, from any of these worlds. He's going to wipe this slate clean. He has to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting to see how Superman does. They just retitled that to be called actually Superman, because
I mean, Superman's a tough one because there's a lot of history of Superman. Like, Batman to me is already on. Like, Batman, you can just make a really dark, weird movie, and people just, again, I the last Batman I loved, It was great because it was just dark and they made the penguin a little darker and it's brooding and it's filmed well. And I'm like, you can't go wrong with this, I think, for most people. Superman lives in a little bit of a different world. And there's a lot of Superman connected content. There's television shows, there's spinoff of television shows, Smallville, there's movies, there's video games. There's so much stuff about Superman that doesn't really exist in a way that other characters, I think, exist in the world. You know, Spider-Man's had some cartoons, Batman's had some cartoons, but I mean, Superman's had multiple television shows. Supergirl is connected to Superman as well. Like, there's so much DC television content for Superman that it's going to be tough to make it stand out on its own to not just be another Superman film.
Yeah. I mean, look, if this is the end of the DCU, I think there are some fun things to look at. I'm not one of those guys like, oh, you ruined whatever. It's like, those are still fun. The fact that the originals of most of these movies are pretty solid. Like, I can easily say Man of Steel, good movie.
Yeah.
Aquaman, great movie. Wonder Woman, good movie, right? Like, you could easily say that, but then...
And look, you know what? Even to extend this, the first Shazam, fun.
Yeah, fun movie, absolutely. Fun.
But
yeah.
Black Adam was just a mess because I just think The Rock's just not the guy for that. He showed up by basically being like, I'm The Rock, so you're going to love this. But, like, Pierce Brosnan's character was great. I'd do a total spinoff and just watch this dude do his stuff for the next, 2 years if they were going to make a film of this. But, like, even that movie... It was bad, but I'm like, it served its purpose. The latest Flash movie wasn't awful. It wasn't like, when it comes to first films for this stuff, most of those first films, they did the job they were supposed to do. It's the sequels and the Justice League stuff that is just bad.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. So there you go. Forget the universe stuff. Just got to focus on these other things. And going into whatever they got going on, I loved the Pattinson Batman movie. Like, I thought that was great.
So I'm looking forward to what they do next. In my opinion, I think you just start, and again, look, and to be fair, Marvel's going through the same problem.
Oh yeah.
Right? After Endgame, it's just been, I mean, you've got Spider-Man, which did great because it was still pretty heavily connected to the result of Endgame, but you got a lot of television content and a lot of films that just weren't good. Right? Like, the consequences aren't there. You've got actors in legal trouble. You've got also Marvel's in a similar situation with where do they go from here with their stuff, right? And I think that's, like you said, the Batman movies are good. You've got James Gunn, who understands all of this. He understands the superhero universe in a way that I think a lot of other directors don't. And the studio, and I think DC is going to have to lean on that, that he's going to have a really pretty concisive plan that has the next 5 years of films decided of what they are, and you get good people connected to them who care about the characters. Because if you don't, people are tired of this content. They are now leaning towards movies like Dune. They are going to lean towards big epic blockbusters that have consequences or are new enough IPs that it's not about just superheroes flying around. It's about real characters. It's about social issues like Barbie. I think people want more than just, hey, give me Robert Downey Jr. throwing finger guns at the camera. Give me more than Jason Momoa. That's where we're going. Those are the movies that have made money the last 2-3 years.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
All right. Well, look, I'm glad we got to talk about this because I feel bad that you love this franchise so much and it's come to an end. But so here's my leaving question to you. Do you think we ever see Aquaman again? Do you think Aquaman comes back as a different? Are you going to get the blonde haired white guy to be Aquaman? Because that's the comics. The comics is just
I'm sure. I'm sure James Gunn will do some sort of Aquaman in his plan. I don't know how much you prioritize it
Do you think Momoa's coming back as Aquaman? Do you think they reshape this character? You think he's done? You think we get a new Aquaman?
I don't think anybody's coming back.
They're all gone.
It's complete fresh start.
Yeah,
it's complete fresh start. Unless he does some sort of multiverse thing, which they do eventually.
New Wonder Woman as well?
New Wonder Woman.
You think Gal Gadot's been burned?
Absolutely. It's over. The sequels. Right. Why were the sequels to all these movies so bad?
I don't know.
Why was 1984 such flaming
so
trash?
It was so bad.
It was so bad. And you had Pedro Pascal. And you had one of the best movie trailers of all time.
Yeah, it's bad.
And then it was so weird, so rapey. It was just bad, man. Like, it was so bad. She saved the day by just talking to people on TV. Like that doesn't make sense. Like none of it makes sense. Oh God, that movie sucked. Everything about it sucked. You just made me mad. You made me mad.
Everyone's gone, and you think you get an Aquaman again
because there is no Okay, here's what I'd say. If anybody comes back, it would probably be Blue Beetle because I think people actually like that.
Oh, that's interesting. I've not
watched The Flash because I think James Gunn liked that movie. Yeah. But the others, like their follow-ups were so catastrophically bad. Like I said, Wonder Woman ruined it. Aquaman 2 ruined it. Batman vs. Superman ruined it. Like
And the good thing is with The Flash, you have a cheat code in The Flash, right? For the comic book fans, they know The Flash is the thing that ties all of these different realities and things together. So if you do keep anyone, it would be The Flash, because The Flash, you could easily find a way of just connecting this world and pretending like this is an alternate Earth that never happened. Like it's in the comics, it's in the history of The Flash. So you could totally do this in a way that would be plausible to the comic book fans who really care about this content.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just have to get fresh. You got to get a new cast. You have to do it like MCU does it. MCU rarely casts big stars to be their heroes.
MCU's talking about bringing back Robert Downey Jr.
It doesn't, but he was Iron Man, so that was again when they brought him back, he was on the brink, right? Like when he was Iron Man, people counted him out. It was a comeback not just for comic book movies, but also him.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people who were unknown or they were just known for different stuff, right? Like Chadwick Boseman was known, but he was doing historical black movies, right? He was playing, you know, historical characters.
Chris Evans was doing goofy B-tier action movies. Like he was in The Losers. He was in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He was great in those. He was always fun to watch. Even when he was The Flash.
Right? Chris Hemsworth was known, but he wasn't a star. Thor made him a giant star.
Exactly. All these guys. So I think the closest you have, they usually use stars for their villains, not their main characters. Yeah. Like one and done. Like you get Christian Bale and Thor, which he wasn't the worst part of that movie. I didn't hate it, but I know people have mixed feelings on Love and Thunder.
Yeah,
but,
fair enough. Yeah.
You know, I think probably the biggest star they got in a movie on MCU was probably like maybe even Brie Larson, because she was more known as like an accomplished actress.
And I'd argue those movies, I've not watched the latest one, but they're not huge. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Like Chadwick Boseman was pretty big, but like you said, the villain, Michael B. Jordan was a bigger star than Chadwick Boseman.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think Chadwick Boseman was huge.
He wasn't huge. Like I knew he was, because I know he was Jackie Robinson, right? He was doing stuff that mattered to, I would argue, black people and people that care about stories and film. But he wasn't known to this MCU. You know, they didn't bring, it's not like they brought in Will Smith.
Correct. Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not, he's not in $100 million plus grossing movies. Right, he's in like the $50 million or the $30 million, right? Just to use hypotheticals like that. That's about what he's working in. So yeah, I think they got to get this cast of, you know, not guys people who are unsuspecting for these kind of roles. Just like when he's casting the Superman thing, I'm like, who's this guy? Perfect. That's what you need.
Yeah, you're right.
I want him
a star, right? The character's bigger than the guy, and the guy becomes just as big when the character is done well. That's always been the model for superheroes.
Like the cast that he has.
Yeah, it comes with
the cast
content
that he has for Superman is, so David Corenswet is the guy.
I have no idea who this is.
He's known for something called Pearl, We Own the City, The Politician, like a bunch of TV stuff. Cool.
Yeah.
And then Rachel Brosnahan is Lois Lane, big in TV for Miss Maisel. But, you know, so people know of her, but not like this.
Yeah.
Not like this. I mean, the biggest name in this, even Nathan Fillion, he's going to be in this movie. I don't know who this is. Guy Gardner. So Nathan Fillion's going to be in this movie. But even him, he has that cachet with the comic book fans. So he's going to come with some sort of expectations, but he's not really a lead.
But you're right, because that's the Marvel formula, right? Even like Shang-Chi, right? Like I would argue your biggest star in Shang-Chi at the time might be Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Which is wild to say, just given how great that. Ben Kingsley, of course, right? But again,
he was more of a goofy. They didn't advertise he was in it.
No, but as far as advertising, right? You throw a guy that's like, oh, who's this guy? This is a cool looking guy, oh yeah, Awkwafina. I know Awkwafina. And that's it. And that's the cast, right? Those are the people that you put on the front of the billing. And that's what you build a franchise out of. So yeah, you're 100% right. That's what they got to do. They got to get rid of, you know, great. I think this ending Aquaman, it's a shame that this is how it ends that universe. But I'm also kind of like, it's fitting and it's time to move on. So.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And the less, when you don't have a big star, it makes it easier for you to be like, that's this guy. That's the hero. Instead of, like, if you had Tom Cruise as Iron Man, all you'd be thinking is, oh, it's Tom Cruise. It would basically just be another Mission Impossible.
Right? Like, I mean, I think some of these films also suffer because the movie blows up and then the star wants input. Mm-hmm. And it's not that stars are bad at giving input. It just becomes a movie by committee. And those movies tend to suffer because Jason Momoa wants to talk about climate change. Okay, cool. But how does that fit into this, right? And then you feel like, yeah, okay, I've got to give something. With a new actor, you don't have to do that. The new actor's happy to be there. And there's something to be said about that. It's not that actors don't make good directors or good producers or good writers. It's just harder when it's like, okay, you got one vision. And you got a person who's new along goes, okay, I'm here for the vision. What do I need to do? Versus, I see your vision, but actually, I was talking last night and I'd love to really get into this. And the studio then comes in and goes, hey, look, we talked to Jason. He really wants to get this in here. And James is like, am I directing this or not? And then that's how that starts to fall apart. So yeah.
Or the other thing is that you have, because a lot of these people, they're not like completely no names. They're established. But they're not established in this kind of thing. So they would do this as a means to say, all right, let me spread my wings. Let me do something fun for a change instead of something like Brie Larson being like, yeah, Room was great.
Yeah.
But what I really want to do is punch Jude Law. It's right. Like, you got it. Here we go.
Yeah, right. And again, that's what you do. You get a big star, you want, you know, because you're part of your marketing is to pull in their fan base into your stuff. Right? Get people that normally don't care about superhero movies in to watch this because of the star that's there. But like you said, the formula has not worked in that way. Even the Suicide Squad, Will Smith did not launch that in the way that people were maybe hoping. You know, Margot Robbie became the bigger star out of that franchise. And I know, she was known, but she was known for being next to Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Like, she was known for being attractive, not for being able to hold a movie on her own. But now there's no question that Margot Robbie can hold a movie on her own.
Yep.
Right. But at the time that you hire for Suicide Squad, it's Will Smith. That's the guy. That's the star. That's where the money's going. And then slowly Margot Robbie takes over and then she starts making her own films and franchises. And then that's like, I wonder if whether or not some of that stuff ties in. Right. Because that is the most successful of your stuff, of the Joker, of Harley Quinn, some of that stuff from the universe. Character wise, there's still some meat left there, but I wouldn't be surprised if they completely recast that stuff. Because why not? Why not?
Yeah, totally.
So, absolutely. All right. Well, yeah, good to talk about. But yeah, we can probably, I think we've exhausted the DCEU universe as much as Aquaman 2 did.
Good riddance. Who the hell knows? What if there's an alternate reality where the third movies are actually excellent for all of these?
They bring them back old and grizzled.
We'll never know. And you know what? You lost your chance.
Yeah.
So good riddance. Goodbye. And to you, dear listener, goodbye to you. And thank you for listening. He'sAbroad.com. Review us, all that good stuff, please. And all right, we're going to start recording some Oppenheimer stuff. So we'll do that and catch you next time.
Shuck it, duck it now.